gentlemen, from Vancouver, British Columbia, we bring you a man who traveled all the way from another nation to get an ovation at the station and only got it from a relation. And here he is, Jack Benny.
Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and it's sure swell to be here. Yes, Don, here we are in Vancouver. What a beautiful city. And that Vancouver Hotel, did you ever see anything so luxurious?
Well, Winston, that's the one with filter blend up front.
Sure, that's the big difference, Barney. Winston picks out special tobaccos.
Then treats them their own special way.
If you're looking for a filter cigarette that really delivers taste.
Hey, this is Dean Martin. I'm Jerry Lewis with the Rainbow Davis Barrier.
Tune in next week for another great Abbott and Costello show brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. And remember, experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before.
C-A-M-A-L-S.
Abbott and Costello's famous baseball routine, Who's On First, is now available at Phonograph Records.
Astound you, spellbound you with heroes and villains, the bad and the good. Watch now as our rockets race here from afar, for now with our Robin we live on a star.
That's the theme song to a terribly animated late 1960s Canadian cartoon show, Rocket Robin Hood, put out by Krantz Animation. Welcome to the Generation Exploitation Podcast. My name is Cliff Nestroff, and today it's my salute to Word Records, the most prolific of all Christian record labels, who throughout the 1950s, 60s, and 70s put out some wonderfully entertaining and awe-inspiring propaganda. And we're about to listen to a cut off the very first ever Christian comedy record, released in 1971 on the Word label by one of the company's executives, who thought himself quite funny, apparently. This LP by Wayne Philpott, titled Hello Rock. But first, let's listen to a guy on Word named John Jimenez. I know you're thinking it should be pronounced Jimenez. On the record itself, that's the way he pronounces his name, so that's the way I'm pronouncing it. John Jimenez and his great anti-drug LP on the Word label. Pick up on this, kid.
Today for our assembly, we have an expert in the field of narcotics. His name is John Jimenez. He's traveled extensively throughout this country and throughout South America, speaking on the evils of dope addiction. So without saying anything further, I present to you Mr. John Jimenez.
Topic today is dope addiction, its involvement, how big it is, how easy it is to get involved, what happens once a person does get involved. How big is dope addiction, for instance, in the United States? Anything and everything to do about dope. And after I tell you a little bit about myself, I'm going to open up for questions and answers. And I'll try my best to answer you. Oh, there might be some things I don't know, but this is the great kick. And I want to say this. This is what pot leads to. This is what LSD leads to. This is what the Smith gluing leads to. This is what speed leads to. This is what peyote leads to. This is what all of these kicks lead to. Okay? Now, we have some questions that boys and girls want to ask me. I'll try my best to answer them as best I can. Why don't we start with the young lady? Do you have a question, young lady? Would you just come right up in front of the microphone, please? Yes.
What did you get out of using dope, really? I mean, what did it really do for you outside of putting you high?
What did dope really do for me? Well, when I first started, as I said, it gave me a kick. It made me feel different than other people. It made me feel superior in a lot of ways. You see? At first, it was a kick. But as I told you, when I found out that I was hooked, then it wasn't a kick no more. It became a nightmare and a life of horror. Okay? You know, a lot of people wonder about this, and they think that they're going to get involved, and it's always going to be a kick. But you know, once you become addicted, you don't get high anymore. But you use dope in order just to be normal. Yes, sir.
When you started taking marijuana, did that influence when you tried to burn down the school? You said you started marijuana before you tried to burn down the school.
I would say definitely. it sure did. The more I smoked marijuana, I was just a kid, 11 years old, remember that? The more I smoked marijuana, the worse I got. The less anybody could tell me. You know? Do you have a question, sir?
Approximately how many shots of heroin does it take to become addicted, or is it different for each person? Does it depend on each particular person?
No, it doesn't. We have a saying in the addict world that it takes one try to make an addict. Let me say this. How many of you have heard that marijuana is not addictive? Let me see your hands. I'm sure you all have. How many of you believe that marijuana is not addictive? A few. And probably some that didn't raise their hand, believe it. I understand, because I myself didn't believe that marijuana was addictive when I started. You remember when I told you in the beginning that when I smoked marijuana, I felt like a little bird, right? I told you that I enjoyed it, that I liked it, that I dug it, right? Well, here's what happened. When I smoked that stick of marijuana and I enjoyed it, something went off in my brain. This is good. This is boss. I like it. I dig it. I'll try it again. You see? So the second time when my friend came with the marijuana, it was no big deal for me to just get up and follow him. I wanted it. There is no known cure for dope addiction. The next question. Yes, sir.
When you took trips, what kind of visions did you see?
Let me say this. When I was using heroin, LSD was almost virtually unknown. And no heroin addict will come down and use LSD. I've never used LSD. I've used other dopes and barbiturates and things like that that have given me, you know, illusions and all of this other stuff and dreams and whatever you want to call it, you understand? But I've never used LSD. Recently in a school, a young man asked me, he said, Mr. Jimenez, he says, do you believe that the wide spread use of marijuana and LSD is taking away from the heroin field, or from the sale of heroin, or from the amount of heroin users? I said, of course not. That's stupid. Because the big pushers, the big heroin pushers, they're overjoyed. They're delighted. to see that all these kids are in every newspaper you read today, in schools and colleges. They're overjoyed. They're jumping with glee. You know why? Because all of their future customers are going to come from all of these kids fooling around with it now. That's where they're going to get their customers. They're not going to get it from a bunch of kids that never smoke marijuana and never get involved in none of these things. No. All of their graduates are coming from kids who are experimenting with all these drugs today that they think are not addictive. Believe me, they're jumping for joy every time they read a newspaper and they read that 100 or 200 kids here or there were arrested for smoking marijuana. They love it because all of these are future and prospective customers. Yes.
Is there any way a casual observer could tell whether a person has taken marijuana or heroin?
Yes, there are numerous ways. For instance, marijuana. Marijuana makes a person laugh a lot. Laughs like a hyena. Really, when I used to smoke pot or marijuana, I couldn't see a bald-headed man. I'd fall on the floor and roll and laugh and laugh. I couldn't see a bald-headed person. It makes you just, you know, laugh. And your eyes get very slanted, you know, and very shiny. And you know, a guy who, for instance, a guy who smokes marijuana thinks that he is the end. He thinks that every girl in the room is looking at him, you know. He thinks he's a Valentino. Really? But you know something? I feel sorry with all my heart for kids who are fooling around with this. You know why? Because it's going to knock you down. You can't beat it. Nobody has ever beaten narcotics. Some have been lucky and gotten off. But let me tell you something. They always came away wounded. You don't beat dope. Dope will always beat you because it's a cancer that will destroy you. I'm not kidding. I mean it with all my heart. I've seen a lot of kids who thought they were smart begin to experiment, and today they've found an early grave. I'm not kidding. I went through horror, and I know what I'm talking about. The only way to avoid dope addiction is by never becoming involved. And that means by never trying it yourself. If you love yourself, if you care about yourself, stay away from it, okay? God bless you and thank you.
Thank you. It's sure great to be here tonight. I'll tell you, I just flew in from Waco, Texas. My arms are still a little tired, but you know, it never ceases to make me nervous when I get in front of a big crowd like this. In fact, it reminds me of the story of the nervous bank robber. You probably heard of him. You know, it was his first bank, and he was really nervous about the whole situation and everything. He got his mask in place, and he walked up to the teller, and he put his gun up in the teller's place, and he says, don't stick with me. This is a mess up. Well, if you'll stick with me, maybe I won't mess up too badly tonight.
And we're going to be laughing at ourselves, I hope. Now, if you don't laugh at this routine, it means you don't know the Bible. So go ahead and laugh, and nobody will know the difference. Okay, here we go. This was written, this piece of satire, the cleverest piece of satire that I've run across in a long time. It was written because some of the ladies in the women's organization in the church had criticized the pastor for changing the order of service. You know, he recognized the visitors at the end of the service instead of just before the offering. And so there was some criticism. And so the next voice you hear will be that of James calling Peter the night before Pentecost to talk to him about the order of service for the next day. Hello, operator. Credit card tall, please. Yes, 312-027-813. That's right. Area code 603. Yes, I would like information there for Peter. That's all, just Peter. James. You guessed it. Right. Well, you might look under Saul of Tarsus, tent and awning, maybe. I tell you what, operator, you might be at the church. Try Antioch 777777. That's perfect. Hello! Is Peter there? May I speak to him, please? Thank you. Hello, Rock! How you doing, Rock, baby? Oh, great. How's the fish? Uh-huh. Well, what do you know about that? That many, huh? Oh, come on, Pete. Sure, I believe you. Uh-huh. You on this side? Nothing, huh? And on the other side? Yeah, sure. No, Pete, I think if I were you, I'd just wait till I got my boat fixed.
Right.
Okay, babe. Good. Yeah, I'll tell everybody hello for you. Right. And if you can make it, be sure and do so. Okay, babe. All right, well, I'll be there early to get the choir started tomorrow. Right. Okay, boy, we'll see you later. What's that? You've changed your name again? Simon? Pete? What is it gonna be next? Oh, that's short and snappy. Spell it for me. P-O-P-E. Well, we'll see you, Pope, baby.
Did you know that the Lord really desires for you to be persistent with Him? Okay? Now, the reason this happens, I really believe, is because He just wants us to stay in His face. You know? I mean, the Lord loves you hanging out with Him. Now, you remember the story about the widow? Okay? This lady was being bothered by her next door neighbor, and she went to the judge and was just constantly before his face. I imagine this lady being in her late 60s, and this guy that's messing with her all the time is in his early 20s. Yeah, I know she liked that. Now, I also imagine that this lady was probably getting ready to go to bed one night, and she took out her false teeth, put them in a glass, and dozed off. I mean, you're laughing, but that's common amongst some folks. And this young guy comes over, steals this lady's false teeth. So the next morning, she wakes up. Somebody got my teeth. Where's my teeth? I know it's probably my next door neighbor. He's always messing with me. I'm gonna get him this time, though. I'm gonna take him to the judge. The punchline is this. The Lord said He will surely bring about justice for His elect that cry to Him day and night.
Never a good sign when the comedian has to say, the punchline is this. bad news. That was Leon Petillo, his Christian comedy record from 1986 on the Word label, titled A Funny Thing Happened, Classic Comedy and Livable Lessons. And he used to be a member of Santana before he became a Christian comic. How about that? And before Petillo, we heard Wayne Philpott, a Christian comedy LP titled Hello Rock. And as far as I can tell, this is the very first Christian comedy record ever made, 1971. However, it's not notable for much else other than that fact. Neither particularly funny intentionally or funny unintentionally. Pretty much lame all over, but a neat cover on it. So a pair of Christian comedy records for you. Not sure what's supposed to be funny about either. Before that, we listened to John Gimenez, or Jimenez, not Jimenez, and his anti-drug LP recorded live at a high school assembly. And he has appeared on vinyl records previously as a member of a group called The Addicts, as in the Word LP, The Addicts Sing. Former drug users now singing gospel music. And he was also a member of the Teen Challenge Drug Addict Choir, which also recorded on Word and as well a couple of other smaller Christian labels. Teen Challenge is a Christian charity that's still around, and it's the charity that George W. Bush credits with helping him kick his alcoholism. John Jimenez, or something like that. We're going to continue with this Christian theme. A couple more high school assembly lectures. Right now, this is a guy named Larry Smith, his Word LP, A Campus Happening.
As president of the student council at Union High School, it's a tremendous privilege to have with us Mr. Larry Smith, a young man who has made numerous appearances on radio and TV and is presently identified with the award-winning movie Way Out. Larry Smith is a native of Winnipeg, Canada, and a graduate of Trinity College in Florida. Mr. Smith travels throughout the United States and Canada, speaking face-to-face with over 50,000 students a month. Let's really welcome Mr. Larry Smith.
As was just mentioned, it's my privilege to be associated with a movie that was filmed in New York City. It's called Way Out, and it's a movie that stars a cast of ex-drug addicts. Eight former heroin addicts were now back in school, back in society, living useful lives. And since filming the picture in New York City, we've had to spend a lot of our time in New York working with addicts. And believe me, New York City is really something else. I mean, if you've never visited New York, you really owe it to yourself to make that scene one of these days. 2 weeks ago, I was in New York, and while I was there, I learned that Mayor Lindsay was conducting a survey down in the Village. You know where all the groovy-looking hippies hang out? And according to the report, he was standing in Washington Square and he saw this one mangy-looking weirdo with a flower in the top of his hair coming right for him. He did a double take. I mean, he really couldn't believe this cat was for real. And his hair was halfway down his back and it was as stringy as yesterday's spaghetti. Had like about two teeth in his head and they didn't hit. When he got closer to the guy, he noticed that he had all of these psychedelic beads and seeds hanging around his neck and his wrist and all of these psychedelic ashtrays strung around his waist. And he looked at the guy for about 5 minutes before he realized he was naked, you know? Finally, when he got up to him, he tapped him on the shoulder and he said, "Young man, we're doing some research on the hippies. Tell me, how do you like LSD?" He said, "Crazy, man, like he's the best president we ever had." He said, "Young man, you must be out of your tree. Don't you know the difference between LSD and LBJ? He said, "Yeah, I dig it, man. Like one's a drug and the other's a dope." And then she began to share with me her story. And she told me how that she was only one step away from becoming a dropout because she was only one step away from becoming a pillhead. The very next day, on Tuesday of this week, I was at another school here in Jersey. And I hadn't even gotten off the platform when two seniors walked up and asked if I'd join them for lunch in the cafeteria. When everyone else had left our table, the one guy leaned over and said, "Man, I've been experimenting with drugs for a couple of years. But now I'm on the hard stuff. For the last 6 months, I've been shooting heroin." And he said, "Man, I'm uptight. I really need help." And I was able to share with both of these guys the story of the eight guys in Way Out, who by the grace of God were able to kick their habits against almost impossible odds. Years ago, the high priest of communism, Karl Marx, said, "Religion is the opiate of the people." But today the conviction is growing throughout America that opiates are fast becoming the religion of the people. Drug addiction is much like the weather. Everybody's talking about it, but not too many people are doing too much about it. And that's why the film Way Out was produced. We've become tremendously concerned about the terrifying rate of increase in drug abuse. The other night in the Philadelphia paper, there was an article that pointed out that drug addiction in the city of Philly has increased over 400% this past year. The authorities there talked to one teenager who was mainlining skag, heroin, and they said, man, we understand that there are probably about 1,100 other addicts in Philly just like you. Do you agree with this? He said, are you kidding me? He said, man, I can show you 1,100 other addicts in one small neighborhood of Philadelphia. Now, when I left New York City a couple of weeks ago, I left behind about 100,000 guys and gals, many of whom are mainlining as much as $50 to $100 a day with the narcotics. Now, man, you know as well as I do that you can't keep that kind of a habit working in a factory. You've got to be stealing left and right anything you can get your hands on. You've got a monkey on your back. You've got a Jones. Over half of the crimes that were committed in New York last year were committed by junkies. Now, Johnny Spence, like most of us, did what he did because everybody else was doing it. Man, you can do what everybody else is doing, but if you're going to do what everybody else is doing, you've got to be prepared to reap the same consequences of what everybody else is doing. You don't have to be a victim of your society. You don't have to let the crowd around you squeeze you into its own mold. It has been said that a person who stands for nothing will fall for anything. Are you willing to be a nonconformist? I'm not talking about the conformity of nonconformity. Are you willing to be a nonconformist in the truest sense of the word? Or are you afraid that you're not conforming will give the crowd license to label you a fake or maybe even a fanatic? Now, it really is true that you guys and gals today probably have more information about sex than any other teenagers in the history of the world. But the sad thing is, the unfortunate thing is, that a lot of the information you have today is misinformation. It just isn't so. You see, we today are the victims of a sex-saturated society. It's the most commercialized thing in our economy. A society that is continually being bombarded by sex. A society that prints about 15 million sex magazines every month. And the sad thing is, well, that's where some of you get your information and your education. Consequently, many of the guys and gals I've counseled with don't even know the difference between sex and love. Now, any animal is capable of sex. I mean, with a dog, any dog will do. But love is different. Sex can be satisfied with anyone, but love can only be satisfied with one. Sex is an act, but love is an attitude. It's something that can't be explained or defined or even put into a test tube. Love is only something that can be experienced between two people. The trouble with a teenager is that he has an adult body. Man, with all of the drives and the stimulations and the passions of an adult. But the hang-up is that he's got a teenage head tacked onto it. Your life is what you want it to be. Thank you. You've been a tremendous audience. I really appreciated talking to you today. Thank you.
This is Jack Brown, who spent 17 years in six of the toughest prisons in America. I speak to some 500,000 high school and college kids each year. I've been asked by many of them to make a recording of my talk to the young people. And so I've consented to do it. This is a talk that I made at one of the high schools, and I trust that you'll enjoy it. Thank you very much. It's certainly good to be here this morning. You must know from that introduction that I've been a part of a captive audience a few times. And I can sympathize with you kids. I know you'd rather be at Disneyland and listen to some old bald-headed man talk, but I'm glad you're here. I should have took that course a long time ago, but I took the course and I came through it all right, and finally they released me to go home on parole. My parole officer was sure he'd have me back in San Quentin in a few days, but my daughter begged me to go to church. I went down the road to a little church with her, and she led me to Christ. And I started speaking to you kids. I don't come to the school to preach to you. We can do that at the church. I come to beg you, don't throw your life away. Don't even get involved with dope. Don't do the things that Jack Brown did. If you do, you're going to get in trouble. And if you're going to insist on behaving as badly as Jack Brown, you ought to come and tell me when this talk's over. I know so many wardens, I could probably get your cell painted any color you wanted. because I know exactly where you're going to wind up if you behave like this. But I think you've got more sense than that. Now, I'd like for you to tell Mother and Dad to come to hear me in some of the services we're going to be. You'll see us advertised on TV and radio around here and in the newspaper. We're in Baptist churches every night. We'd like for you to come and hear the rest of the Jack Brown story. But I want to thank you for listening to me this morning and say God bless you. Thank you very much, kid. You've been wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. As I said in this talk to these beautiful kids, I don't come to the schools to preach to you. We can do that in the churches. And they follow me by the thousands into the churches, where I'm able to tell them the rest of the Jack Brown story of how the marvelous grace of God has helped me to change my life and make me a new part of his creation. And that's why I go to these kids. I want to try to reshape and remold the lives of those young ones that have started to behave like Jack Brown. For I came out of San Quentin prison 5 years ago. Well, the only strange thing about that was that he was Jewish. I don't think one Jewish fella has ever gone to as many Youth for Christ meetings and meetings for young people in churches as this Jewish fella. The following year, I was privileged to speak to 828,000 beautiful American kids. And that's exactly why I'm making this record. I want mothers and dads to know that what I'm saying is a shock thing to your beautiful young people. And my wife said, you'll have to go to them, Jack, because they keep you alive and make me feel young. And I trust that you've enjoyed this album, and God bless you.
It is no
You're still listening to the Generation Exploitation Podcast. My name is Cliff Nestroff. That's 5 years ahead of my time by the Third Bardo, taking off the Pebbles compilation series, Pebbles Volume 3, a collection of demented classics from the psychedelic 60s, and this comp was released in 1979. Before that, we heard Jack Tells It Like It Is, 30 years a drug addict, 17 years in prison, 3 years solitary confinement. Jack Brown Tells It Like It Is. This LP from 1970 on Jack Brown Records, Canoga Park, California. Before Jack Brown, we heard Larry Smith and his LP on Word Records, A Campus Happening. And Larry Smith talked about a movie he was involved in called Way Out, a film starring 8 former drug addicts now living useful lives. And the film was released in 1967. Get this, the script was written by John Jimenez, who we heard earlier on his Christian Scare Tactic Lecture LP. The film Way Out has, believe it or not, actually been reissued on DVD now by the great Something Weird video label. So you can order that Way Out.
I hit Vancouver in the blazing sun on the 9th of February 61, and from the 10th of February through till May it rained and poured all night and day. The more they try to keep me down, the better I live in this here town. And the more they try to grind you down, the better I like Vancouver town. What happens here? This is incredible how this works. Finally, the applause dies down and disappears altogether, and then you can hear the words. It's incredible how it works. 10 years almost to the day I caught my first glimpse of English Bay. I've travelled the earth from Perth to Rome, but coming back here is like coming home. The more they try to keep me down, well, the better I live in this here town. Yeah, the more they try to grind you down, better I love Vancouver town. I can see those tankers sailing down with Alaskan oil all slurping round. They'll take a sip from Trudeau's cup and leave our coast all fuddle-duddled up. The more they try to keep me down, the better I live in this here town. Yeah, the more they try to grind you down, the better I love Vancouver town. I passed a church and I had a grin. There's a sign said, tired of sin, come in. And written in lipstick loud and clear was, if not, phone this number here. The more they try to keep me down, the better I live in this here town. Yeah, the more they try to grind you down, the better I like Vancouver town. To lots of chaps was a terrible blow, but the topless waitresses had to go. Well, the problem was, when you come to grips, they had no place to put their tips. The more they try to keep me down, the better you live in this here town. Yeah, the more they try to grind you down, the better I like Vancouver town. Ding dong bell, pussy's in the well. Been down there for more than a year, no wonder the water tastes bloomin' queer. The more they try to keep me down, well, the better I live in this here town. Yeah, the more they try to grind you down, better I like Vancouver town. The Lions need a quarterback, the Canucks are glad to get Curtin back. But are they Australian teams, I wonder? They always seem to be right down under. Just recently, Australia's national folk hero, Ned Kelly, was portrayed on film. And the fella they chose for the role was Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones. Most Australians were up in arms about it. And to cement friendly public relations, he arrived in Sydney, dressed in a woman's overcoat and high heels and carrying a handbag. Dear, oh dear. The film Ned Kelly, Strike Me Dead. Mick Jagger playing the part of Ned. Can you see it galloping on its horse? Riding side saddle, of course. The more they try to keep me down, the better I live in this here town. Yeah, the more they try to grind you down, the better I like Vancouver town. Special verse. There were 2 wild Kelowna boys, and Bennett was the name. They bought some land and sold some land and made a capital gain. And when their daddy spoke to them in accents loud and shrill, they said, we merely followed the lead of the sons of Flying Phil. But the more they tried to keep me down, the better.
very pleasant good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And here in the famous Chicago Playboy Club, we present a man, a young man, a humorist, who faces the realities of our time with a smile on his mobile face. Ladies and gentlemen, Dick Gregory.
See, I wish you'd read all the papers. You know, you've been reading these local papers, you know, calling me the Negro Mark Saul. You have to read in Congo papers and see what they're calling Mark Saul, the white Dick Gregory. Since I've been on the Jack Paar show, everybody's been asking me, what is Jack Paar really like? I'm trying to find out who I am. Yeah, they can call me Bob Newhart, Shelley Berman, Mark Saul, and a couple of... I'm so confused, me and three white boys and myself, I don't know what to do. But the way things go in 10 years from now, you have to be my color to get a job. I'd like to thank you very wonderful people in the audience who have talked about my act and come back and bring your friends with you. And through doing this, you push me right up into the eyes of the Internal Revenue. Before all this happened, I never worried about tax. They're out to my home every day now. You know? Oh, they don't bother. You know, they come in and, oh, we with the Internal Revenue. We're not coming for no business. Come to visit the wife and family, you know. And sit there 2 hours talking about Joe Louis. And I make like I don't know who Joe Louis is. And the guy believed it. He said, you mean you never heard of Joe Louis? Never? I said, oh, yeah, yeah, you're talking about the tax consultant. See, in this income bracket I'm in now, we fill out what you call estimates earning, where you guess how much you're going to make for the year, and it was due in last week. Well, I sent mine in last week, but I didn't sign my name to it. See, I feel if I have to guess how much I'm going to make, you guess who this is. And they did. A lot of people don't understand how we can own so many Cadillacs with them inferior jobs where racial segregation buys us Cadillacs. You have a country club you can join, I can't, so I save $500 a year. You know damn well I'm not taking my family to Florida this winter, that's another $1,500 I save. Walk out here tonight and get hit by a bus, I'm not going to the best hospital where they're going to charge me $2,500, so I go to City Hospital for free. Pick it up. I say $2,500 plus $2,000, $4,500 General Motors sell me anything I want. There's a lot of nice things happen to you in the course of a lifetime. A couple of weeks ago, the great Jewish comedian Myron Cohen was passing through town, and he called me up and invited me by his hotel for dinner, and all my Jewish friends were there. Eartha Katz. Billy Epstein, Harry Belafonte, oh, he's Italian. You see, Ralph Bunch was supposed to have been there, but like he's in Israel trying to explain Sammy Davis. And I don't care what you say, Mae Britt will never make Miss Alabama in 1961. If you really want to have some fun, you ought to make like you colored one day. I suggest you do it on a weekend. If you do it through the week, you might get fired. Talked to a lot of the television producers, and I told them, I want to see some colored cops on Untouchable. One day I turned my set on, instead of seeing 77 Sunset Strip, I'm going to see 77 Cottage Grove. But I understand they're giving us our own show next year called Stagecoach South. Starring Sammy Davis and Mae Britt. And Sammy going to have a swinging part. And I know the first time one of us do a cowboy, the Indian going to win, you know. There's nothing free anymore. Nothing, you can't even hate free. Don't you think for 1 minute all you have to do to join the Ku Klux Klan is hate me. Cash money. $250 initiation fee and buy your own sheet. Plus, keep up your dues. Nothing free, is no, nothing free. You take the NAACP, it's a wonderful organization. I belong to it myself. I feel they're doing a hell of a job. But do you realize if we had complete integration in the morning, all them cats be out of work?
Come on in my hoys, I'm gonna give you Tagalog. Come on in my hoys, mine hoys, I'm gonna give you puppy cha, una pizza caliva. Come on in my hoys, come on. Come on in my hoys, come on. Come on in mine hoys, I'm gonna give you chicken fliggle and a lox and kegel. Come on in my hoys, come on. Come on in my hoys, no function on. Come on in mine hoys, I'm gonna give you 2 cents plain. Come on, I'll give you grippiness. It's licked in boy just like a stain. Give you matzo ball. Come on in mine hoys, I'm gonna give you Knishun fish on a glazel head a call.
Head a call?
I am.
Thank you. Come on in my hoys, come on. Come on in my hoys, come on. Come on in my hoys, mine hoys, I'm gonna give you Timison Knadel and I love your shaitel. Come on in my hoys, come on. Come on in my hoys, come on. Come on in mine hoys, I'm gonna give you face of mine. Come on in mine hoys, feel less soon, fresh soon, hackerein, hackerein, hackerein. No come shinerein, bubele.
That's Mickey Katz and his orchestra. Come on in mine house. The novelty act of Mickey Katz, full of Yiddishism. He was a one-time member of Spike Jones and his City Slickers, who branched off on his own, sort of doing the same kind of stuff, but a little bit more ethnic, I guess you would say, off his very first Capitol Records LP, simply titled Mickey Katz and His Orchestra. Before that, we listened to a track by Dick Gregory off his LP In Living Black and White. Great stuff on Cole Picks Records. Saw Dick Gregory recently speaking at an anti-war march in D.C., so he's still at it, and we need him, Dick Gregory. Before that, we heard Rolf Harris and a song about Vancouver. Vancouver Town 71 is the name of the track off the Aussie-British Comics LP Jake the Pig in Vancouver Town, recorded live at the Cave Nightclub, also on Capitol Records. That's it for me and the Generation Exploitation podcast this week. Leave you with Abbott and Costello.
According to a recent nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Three leading independent research organizations asked this question of 113,597 doctors. What cigarette do you smoke, doctor? The brand named most was Camel. Now, you probably enjoy rich, full flavor and cool mildness in a cigarette just as much as doctors do. And that's why, if you're not a Camel smoker now, try a Camel on your T-zone. That's T for taste and T for throat. Your true proving ground for any cigarette. See if Camel's rich flavor of superbly blended choice tobaccos isn't extra delightful to your taste. See if Camel's cool mildness isn't in harmony with your throat. See if you too don't say, Camels suit my T-zone to a T.
Well, Costello, I'm going to New York with you. You know, Bucky Harris, the Yanks manager, gave me a job as coach for as long as you're on the team. Look, Abbott,
If you're a coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, you know, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but you know, strange it may seem, they give these ball players nowadays very peculiar
you
names.
You mean funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
His brother Daffy?
Daffy Dean.
And their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean, oh, I see. Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach, too?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Oh, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Look, you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy that gets the
That's
money.
That's it.
Who gets the money on
he
first
base? He does, every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. What's wrong with that?
Look, all I want to know is when you sign up the first baseman, how does he sign his name to
Who?
The contract? The guy.
Who?
How does he sign his
That's
name?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base.
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, don't change the players.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
Guy's name on first base.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about him. Now, let's begin.
Now, how did I get on third base?
Why, you mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again. Will you stay on third base
right.
And don't go off it?
All right, what do you want to know?
Now, who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
What is on second?
You don't want who on second?
Who is on first?
I don't know. Third base. Field?
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Now tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of the infield. I want to know what's the guy's name in left field.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. And the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field.
He's center field. Look, you got a pitcher on the team.
Sure.
The pitcher's name.
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you,
then
man.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow are you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen, who is not pitching?
I'll break your arm, you say, who's on first. I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know.
Third base.
Got a catcher?
Certainly.
The catcher's name.
Today.
Today. And tomorrow's pitcher.
Now you've got it.
All we got is a couple of days on the
left hand.
I'm a catcher, too.
So they tell me.
I get behind the plate, do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and a heavy hitter gets up.
Yes.
Now, the heavy hitter bunts the ball. When he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
That's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball at first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Look, if I throw the ball at first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
No, you don't. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I say.
You're not saying that.
I throw the ball to naturally.
You throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
Listen, you ask me.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now you ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's
same
it.
As you.
Don't change it around.
Same as you.
Go ahead, now get it over.
I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball and the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
I'm an idiot.
Back in just a moment for Camel Cigarette. During the war, the makers of Camel Cigarettes sent a total of more than 150 million free Camels to our fighting men overseas. Now free Camels are sent to servicemen's hospitals instead. This week, the Camels go to Veterans Hospital, Fort Lyon, Colorado, USAAF Station Hospital, Davis-Monthan Field, Tucson, Arizona, U.S. Naval Hospital, Quantico, Virginia, U.S. Marine Hospital, Baltimore, Maryland, and Veterans Hospital, Palo Alto, California. Camel broadcasts go out to the United States 3 times a week. Our rebroadcast to practically every area in the world where men are still stationed and to our good neighbors in Central and South America. And now back to Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
What is that, Lou, you've got in your hand there? Another telegram?
Hey, Abbott, look, I just got a telegram from Joe DiMaggio.
Well, go ahead and read it.
Okay.
Dear Lou, just heard your show. I think you have the makings of the world's greatest natural ball player. You have spiked teeth, a club head, and you've been off your base for years.
Good night. Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody, and a special good night to Joe DiMaggio. Get well quick, Joe.
Listen to Abbott and Costello again next Thursday night when Costello is going to build himself a new prefabricated house. You can imagine the trouble he'll get into. I don't know whether it'll be a one-story house or a two-story house, but anyway, that's another story.
Prince Albert Pipe Appeal. They're one and the same thing. Any tobacco burns, makes smoke, but where else can you find the tobacco that has the pipe appeal of Prince Albert? The coolness, mildness, the rich, full flavor. Prince Albert is specially treated to ensure against tongue bite. Crimp cut to smoke slow and cool. So pack your pipe with Mellow Rich PA. Enjoy Pipe Appeal with Prince Albert. And while we're speaking of enjoying yourself, be sure to tune in on Grand Ole Opry on NBC Saturday night. You all know and love the songs of America, but this week you have something extra special in store for you. Red Foley and his guests, Ernest Tubb and Roy Acuff. Grand Ole Opry, Saturday night on NBC.
Be sure to tune in next week for another great Abbott and Costello show brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. And remember, experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Abbott and Costello's famous baseball routine, Who's On First, is now available at Phonograph Records. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night for Camel.